Welcome to Case in Point, produced by the University of Pennsylvania Carey Law School. I'm your humble host, Matt Merrin, from the Communications Department. And with help from the law school's Development and Alumni Relations Communications Director, Larry Teitelbaum, Gary Sangha from the JD class of 2003 is the founder and CEO of LexCheck. And Joe Borstein from the JD class of 2005 is an award-winning alternative legal services industry leader. They join us on Case in Point to discuss the importance of adopting technology in the legal industry. All right. So Gary and Joe, thank you for joining us today. Why has the legal profession been so slow in some quarters to adopt technology?
So this is Gary Sangha. Thanks so much for having me. The reason why legal has been so slow is there's a myriad of reasons. So primarily, you know, look, legal has been on this trailing end of the technology adoption curve because people feel that they are not incentivized to adopt technology. At best, at worst, people are fearful that technology will actually take away work. So that's what it kind of boils down to in a nutshell. And then if you go into specific subsectors of legal, there's other issues, right? So if you're in a law firm environment, especially the AmLaw 200, technology is capital investment, right? And a lot of these folks will, you know, they get their income at the end of the year and they may or may not be lifers at that law firm, right? So what incentives do they have to make capital investments for that pay dividends for future years out, right? Or what incentives do they have for investments that train up fellow attorneys or have productivity that may not, you know, impact their specific bottom line because they have a book of business, for example, right? You also have a sense, in my view, of just the fear of technology. And this could be, it goes in two ways, right? One is a straight up fear, hey, this is gonna automate my work because my work is that straightforward. Or the corollary is, my work is so bespoke and so high end that no way a machine could touch it. I'm not even going to give it a chance, right? And they're both clearly off, right? But they both look, but they both kind of result in the, I don't know, what do you call it? It's like my toddler does this, you know, the hands in the air and yelling scenario, right? Or the ostrich, you know, the ground scenario. But that's just, you know, broadly my view. Joe, what are your thoughts?
I think you nailed it. I would add a couple things, which I actually think you touched on. It's just going to put it a different way. Number one is, I think, a culture of precedent. So remember, we are taught as lawyers started to see this in general, you're supposed to do what was done before. And remember, there are carrots and sticks in the legal industry. You can be sanctioned for doing things wrong. So I think some of the fear of doing things new is somewhat unique to the legal industry in that, in the way we are taught and also in the way we are regulated, in that if we make critical mistakes, it's not just a mistake for the client where you owe them some money back. You can actually be disciplined by the broader bar association. So that there's an inherent fear and a culture of sticking to the script. I think what Gary said was really right about retained earnings. It costs money to make capital improvements. And remember, also under our regulatory regime, lawyers cannot share ownership with non-lawyers. So you can't issue publicly traded stocks and bonds and do the things that other businesses do to upgrade their technology infrastructure. Finally, I'd say that there one thing I've really struggled with in convincing lawyers to try new things, new technologies, new processes, is a concept that I think is very familiar in other industries, but not familiar in law. And that is that it is conceivable that if you lower costs and provide better services, you might actually get more business, not less. That is something that I can barely convince anyone of. It. Even when we come to Penn Law, it comes up over and over, this idea of replacement. Will technology replace what lawyers are doing? And it's my thesis, and only time will bear this out, that the market as a whole will be far bigger once we streamline costs. And that's because I think there's untapped demand for legal services. People actually want to consume more of it and spend more of their yearly budget on legal, but the to dip your toes in and to start getting legal advice is so expensive that people simply don't do it at all. Flying is a great example. As the costs of air travel came down, the industry of airlines went through the roof. Like, there were just more flights, or ended up actually being more pilots after autopilot was invented, because instead of three, you only needed two pilots, but there were so many more flights in the air that there was actually more demand for pilots than ever. My guess is that would be true in law as well, but very few people believe that and think that by bringing on things that streamline work, you're simply going to have less work.
I 110% agree with Joe, because there's a clearly an excess demand for legal services that isn't being met, right? And you can just see it as a proxy for, you know, you can see the way corporations consume legal services, or you can see even see how high-income Americans consume legal services, right? And clearly, middle-income Americans and lower-income Americans don't consume legal services at the same rate, which just doesn't make sense because, you know, things happen to everybody in life, right? Typically, legal services should track GDP growth, right? And GDP has obviously grown. So there's clearly untapped demand for legal services that tech could help bridge. What's paradoxical about legal services is there's also an excess supply of legal, right? There's a bunch of lawyers who don't bill enough, right? And that's due to another set of reasons, right? Just the cost structures and whatnot. But clearly, but legal is a weird sector, right? Where you have an excess demand and excess supply problem, right? The demand and supply curves don't meet. That's bad. And that's a problem, right? There's something wrong there. And technology is a straight up simple way to solve that.
Yeah. If we could even stay with this for one more minute, I think that the last aspect is a sort of pride and prestige angle, which is I think most lawyers, including at Penn Law, think that if you're doing work in the legal industry that is not the practice of law, it is somehow kind of less prestigious. And I guess that's something that I've been trying to fight back on with my articles in Above the Law for years. But if you think about what Gary did, or what the founders of my company, Pangea 3, did, who are also both Penn Law grads, they both helped create industries, one being in legal tech and one being in legal services, that have driven the cost of legal services down all over the world. So, you know, if you can think a little bit more broadly about what it means to be a lawyer and to solve legal problems at scale, it's certainly not just the practice of law. You know, it's also legislation. It's also creating technology. It should also be creating new service models. Anything where you're able to broadly and at scale help the legal industry should be a source of, you know, pride and income and prestige and all of those kind of good things that people want with their degree.
And I think you touched on this a little bit, but let's expand. Why is it important to embrace the technology, and how will the lawyers of tomorrow and their employers benefit from the use of these new tools?
As a baseline, you have to remember you're never worse off, right, by embracing productivity tools, right? As long as the price is right. So, you know, I think sometimes lawyers feel that, you know, okay, it's going to take away parts of my work, or there's, you know, how am I going to bill? I rarely meet lawyers, and again, where I specialize is corporate legal, right, transactional work, that I've had too much time to perform a task, right? Even when, you know, you have tools that can add productivity, that can automate certain tasks, there's so much other stuff that needs to be done. Even if you're doing your work as is, there's stuff that you could have been done better. The stuff that, you know, you couldn't focus on because you have to do the baseline road stuff first, right? So you really, again, assuming the price is right, obviously you're not going to pay, you know, $1 million for, you know, a new pencil, but assuming the price is right and the ROI is there, you're never worse off, right? Because you can do other things with that time.
Yeah, I think sometimes it helps. I completely agree with Gary. And it also helps to sometimes dig into really niche examples to see how everyone can benefit in some way. Imagine a situation where, you know, a small drug company, we'll call it Drug Co., you know, believes that a patent was infringed upon by, you know, one of the big drug co. They believe that they have a valid lawsuit, and they believe they could recover $10 million. If the costs of prosecuting that claim are, you know, between $5 and $10 million and the odds are 50-50, it's a negative expected outcome and the case will never be brought. If via using technology and globalized services, predictive coding, predictive analytics, you can drive the cost of that down from 5 to 10 million to, let's say, 1 or 2 million, then you have a positive expected outcome. Now, look what happens in the legal industry. One, a valid claim was able to be brought, right? So that's, you know, good for justice, good for business, good for everyone. Two, the plaintiff's firm now has a case, which they didn't have because it was not economically viable. Three, the defense firm has a case. you've created by bringing down the cost of this prosecution. You've created a valid claim. You've created work on both sides, and you've grown the pie. Again, like that type of example, I don't think you'd even need to make in most other industries because the common sense that, you know, computers as they came down from $10,000 down to, you know, whatever they are now, a couple hundred dollars. Obviously is going to grow the market. It is more intuitive. It's less intuitive in law, but it is true, or at least I believe it's true. So I think all of these technologies, besides making your work better, cheaper, faster, should in the aggregate grow the pie.
Right. And also just imagine going backwards in time, right? So imagine going backwards, you know, 10, 20 years when, you know, you didn't have e-discovery tools. You didn't have diligence automation tools, right? Could you ever imagine going back to a time where you'd have to review all this paperwork manually again? It would be absurd.
You just couldn't do it. Yeah. You just, the cases would, the number of cases would drop dramatically because, you know, for that break-even economic scenario, the expected outcome would have to be so gigantic, you just wouldn't bring cases. And what that means is also that the, you know, the bigger players can really bully the smaller players, smaller companies like, you know, the small pharma company we just talked about, and take from them. And really it hurts the system of justice all in all. That's what, you know, one of the reasons I brought up this idea of prestige. Like I want people to build these technologies and build these new service models to be looked upon as in part heroes of justice, just like lawyers. And it's not to take away from the practice of the lawyer. They both should. They're both allowing the system to function better. I just think the focus right now is on technology because it is the new player in the space and legal, as opposed to the practice of law, which, you know, certainly has been a noble profession forever and continues to be when done right.
For sure. And is the fear that automation will displace some lawyers warranted?
In the sense that automation lawyers as a profession, no, I don't believe that. In terms of automating certain tasks, clearly, right? But remember, lawyers aren't just robots, right? They're not just ATMs that just punch out, you know, a specific task, right? There's so much more, right? There's a human component involved in legal services, right? That it's not going to automate lawyers, but there are definitely tasks, especially rote, repetitive, you know, low margin, low value tasks that tech could probably do better.
I don't like the word replace. I think it's going to change what they do. So document review is a great example. You know, in my last year practicing, I was working on a case with about 10 million documents over about 100 third-party subpoenas. I spent all of my time managing teams doing triage. Now, a lot of that could be done with technology and globalized services, right? Predictive coding could sort and filter better. But all of that technology would have likely filtered it down from 10 million to, let's say, 500,000. Now, just sit with that number for a second. 500,000 documents, not pages. There is still a virtually infinite amount of work, and that work is still document review. It's just that now I'm looking at things that have a high likelihood of being relevant to my case. So would it have shifted? Let's say we went back in time and brought predictive coding. I think we would have needed just as big a team. I think we would have built just as many hours, though what we would have done is far more productive and far more effective in getting to the truth. But would it have shifted what I did? Absolutely. And it will. It will continue to move people up the value chain. So in the example we gave before about the, you know, the small company suing the big company. As there are more lawsuits on smaller scale and things like that, and probably more deals also, because, you know, deals have the same threshold. They cost money and they need to be of a certain size to be worth it. You will probably have more kind of high value work and more of the low value work being taken up by automation and globalization. So yes, I think shift, absolutely. Will it net take away work? I actually don't think so. And what we've seen in the last 10 years is as automation has grown and as globalization has grown, law firms have grown about a little bit faster than inflation, not much, not like the years before the Great Recession, but you have seen growth. And what that tells me is the globalized services, which probably have 10,000 people offshore working on U.S. legal work, that means there actually is more work because those people are busy and the U.S. attorneys have been busy.
And what role will technology play in closing the justice gap?
Gary, you want to kick this off?
Yeah. Well, I think that's a huge, huge issue. I think tech plays, has definitely a massive role to play because the demand and supply gap is most acute there, right? Most lawyers with their law school debts and whatnot just couldn't service people, right? And those people in turn can't pay the fees, right? And it's, borderline tragic, frankly, right? That people can't get access to justice just because of the economics are broken. Look, there's several ways to solve the problem, right? One is obviously just the guilds and the bar associations restricting supply of lawyers. But from a technology standpoint, there's so much that can be done, right? I read about these just tragedies where, people can't, get their pleas right and whatnot. And it results in people just, not getting bail and all sorts of, terrible circumstances just because they just don't even know how to do the process. I mean, you can literally, at this point, you can actually probably have machines that you can just almost like an ATM where you can plug, enter it in results and answers and get things done. So huge role to play. The problem is, and it's a simple, they're all solvable technology problems, right? There's nothing cutting edge even needed to make a big impact. The problem is, how do you get people incentivized to do something, right? So for guys like Joe or myself, I mean, we could do something, but as technology vendors, developers, the economics aren't necessarily there, right? Which is kind of sad.
Completely agree. I mean, so I think a lot of the access to justice issues come from an extremely complicated court system in which very few people have personal incentives. There is not a free market like there is in the private sector. So imagine how slow things move in the private sector. And there is personal economic advantages to change, that some of which we've walked through. Very few people stand to gain through technological advancement in the government sector and the court sector. So I think the potential for good is absolutely tremendous. I mean, just so many of the things that make law difficult are just the process and the physical locations and filling out forms right, almost all of which can be handled with technology. But it is a bit of a mystery how we jumpstart that. I think it just has to be a much bigger priority for the government than it is now. I will say on the private side, like in the pro bono world, you do have fantastic companies like Paladin who are trying to make distribution of pro bono services better and more effective, and they're doing a great job at it. So I have a little bit more hope there.
If you could, as like kind of a closing summation, can you give like a minute elevator pitch for better proliferation of technology in the legal industry? Like maybe a minute each?
What's happened since the Great Recession is clients have now wised up to legal services, legal fees, and what's being billed for a while, right? So the era when legal services was just a black box and you can give the client a bill and there you go is gone, right? So the fact that these tools are out means the genie is out, right? So you frankly don't have a choice, right? Because eventually the client is going to figure out that there's productivity tools out there and your competitors are going to figure it out. And it's in your incentive to be seen as cutting edge. You don't want to have to be the one that is the least tech forward, right? It's not going to suit your interests.
Look, I mean, I think if you're going to sum up in a minute, I would want to speak to the people coming out of law school and the recent graduates. I would tell them to use their instincts that they had even before law school. And those instincts typically are that if you can do work better, cheaper, and faster, you're going to have a fabulous career. Don't be afraid of progress. Embrace it, right? Look at the tools around you and think about whether you can outsource, automate, or delegate the expensive routine and frankly, least fun aspects of the work and hand your client a product that is better, cheaper, and faster. And believe in your heart, because it's true, that in the long run, if you do that and you continue to embrace change, you're going to have a long and extremely lucrative career. Because you are going to be the one with the best tools, the best technology, and the best, at the end of the day, legal output. And I think, I hope we can persuade the lawyers that have been at it for forever, but I know we can persuade the people that are just getting into the market. Just do the best work you can, and it will work out. And that involves technology.
Great. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. That was a very insightful interview. Thank you. And be safe out there.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun. Thanks for having us.